And then there were two, the Chicago Blackhawks and the Tampa Bay Lightning. James, is this the fastest cup final matchup we've had in the last 10 years?
The pace is going to be insane, man. I mean, I think whoever's coming out of the East is a fast team. But holy shit. I mean, the triplets line, just that alone against the Kane line, that's going to be a lot of speed. And I can't even imagine the pace. I'm pretty excited. Despite the team coming out of the East may not have been the one I wanted to. You know, I'm still going to tune in.
I thought you took that well at the Fox and Hound at the Section 328 watch party. Big thanks again to Mike and Derek for getting that together at the Fox and Hound at North Hills. We will be doing another one. It sounds like Mike's going to get something together for one of the games for the Cup Finals, so stay tuned. Follow him if you're not already. So we'll be doing that again. It was a great time at the Fox and Hound. We all had a blast. Yep. But James was a bit preoccupied. I think he took it like a champ.
Well, you know, I'm not the kind of guy that shows the rage on their sleeve. I just, you know, kind of went catatonic for about a good 30, 45 minutes. Just disheartened.
Would you rather lose the way the Rangers did or the way the Ducks did?
The way the Rangers did.
Yep.
And honestly, I mean,
4-0 and midway through the second last night.
Oh, that was brutal. That was such a downer of a game, too.
It really was.
I've been lauding that series as like, oh, this is going to be as good as last year's Western Conference final. This is going to be a bloodbath. And wow. Just a shocker, too. I mean, absolute shocker. When Taves put those first two in, I was like, we were sitting at the bar, and I was like, this is nuts. You know?
Anaheim couldn't climb back to the point of a one-goal game. Managed to make it a two-goal differential at two different times in the third period. But, oh, man. I mean, it's hard to complain about, like, we had back-to-back game sevens. One of them was basically a one-goal game for the entire thing.
Yeah.
Well, you know, tied through two periods, but a one-goal game through to the end. This one was never close, but it would have been nice to have one of them go OT. Chicago, Tampa, right off the bat, what do you think?
Gut feeling? Chicago brings a cut back. I really think so. At this point, Jonathan Toews. I don't know if you read this piece. It was on the Players Tribune. Mike Rupp did his little.
Oh yeah.
You see the one about Toews saying he's probably going to be one of the most decorated players since Gretzky. In terms of awards and accolades.
Yeah.
And I could see in terms.
That's
of,
what Rupp said.
Yeah. And I could see that in terms of championship rings.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm seeing
or
here.
Or he's working on number three.
Yeah. At the age he's at.
Yeah.
Couple Olympic golds. I mean.
In terms of individual awards, really? I mean, I guess
no. Not I think I'm assuming team awards because there's no way.
Yeah,
there's no way. But this is a man that in the playoff becomes a completely different beast.
He's never going to win a single MVP.
Oh God, no! Because he's an all around monstrosity on the ice. Like he does everything excellently. He is to me the most complete hockey player in terms of defensive ability.
You can't argue that.
Yeah,
you cannot argue that.
He's a physical beast too. I mean. He's everything Ryan Getzlaf should have been in Game 7.
Mm.
You can't argue that.
Mm.
And that's, to me, that's the thing that puts him over the hump over Tampa. No, I'll say Chicago in 6. That's my gut feeling. That said, say Stamkos rises to the occasion. You never know.
Yep.
You know, if there's enough speed to burn, and that top four for Chicago has played some hard, long minutes, you know.
Yeah, the D. Yeah,
and those guys. Some of those guys can get turnstile.
Absolutely. David Rundblad played 5:35 last night.
That's sad.
It's just Kyle Komiski, his partner, played 8:31.
Why bother dressing a third pair?
Q barely does.
Yeah, he doesn't.
Q barely does.
You know, at that point.
Now, can he go 4 to 7 more games doing this?
No way.
You don't think so?
I really don't think so, and I think at some point they're going to have to rely on somebody, and that's going to be the big question mark for me for Chicago. That's where the series could turn in Tampa's favor, because by game 4-ish is probably when guys, maybe not Keith because he's just not human probably, but your Oduya, Seabrook, might start getting beat by guys like Johnson and Filppula and Andre Palat that are just going to blow by them and turnstile them.
Especially games in Tampa.
Yeah,
when Cooper can match to the way he wants.
Exactly. And that Q's going to have to start playing guys like Rundblad more and more just because he's going to have to distribute the minutes. This is just not sustainable.
Game 1, Wednesday night, 8:00 p.m. East Coast time. Games 1 and 2 in Tampa, Chicago, Tampa, Chicago, and Tampa would host a tentative Game 7 Wednesday, June 17. Man, I'm going to be in Canada for Games 5, 6, and 7.
You bastard.
Well, Game 5 is the night of my cousin's wedding, so we're not going to be watching that. It'll be on at whatever after party we're at. Game 6, Monday the 15th. Oh, I don't know. I don't know. I'm supposed to meet Merrick, too. I'm supposed to be up in Toronto and see if he's going to be free. So if it goes 5 or 6 or 7, then he's probably going to be tied up. But it's going to be an interesting series. And like I said at the start, we're going to be watching at least one of them. I don't know if I'll be able to make it, depending on when Mike puts it. But we're going to be watching at least one of them together as a little Twitter unit. It was a great time. You know, Mike, Derek, Big Mike was there. Patty mm-hmm. Clark came out. Leah Zeidman was there. It was a lot of fun. We'd like to see some more of you folks come out. So if you can make the next one that Mike will be announcing soon, then we'd love to see you. Today's show, we've got Dom Gallimini from nowhere, from his own place, ownthepuck.blogspot.ca. He is the head honcho there. You might know him, Mimico Hero on Twitter, from his hero charts, his horizontal evaluative rankings optic hero chart for forwards and D-men, just a way of expressing shots, goals, suppressed shots, individual scoring shots on goal rates as a measure of where they rank among other forwards and defensemen in the NHL. He's going to join us and talk a little bit about hero charts later, and then we'll wrap up with some talk about coaching and front office stuff, because we haven't really hit on a lot of that. So, James, what do you think? Should we bring on Mimico Hero?
Yeah, might as well.
Smart kid.
Yeah.
Really smart kid. All right, Dom Gallimini, Mimico Hero, joins us next. Joining us on this edition of the Canes Weekly Podcast is Dominic Gallimini. Dominic, did I get that right?
Yeah, you did.
All right, he's at Mimico Hero on Twitter, ownthepuck.blogspot.ca, or ownthepuck.com. He's the only writer there. It's his blog for advanced stats and hockey analysis. Dom is the creator of hero charts, which have been floating around for the last few months. Super helpful charts. Dom, you want to explain those a little bit to those of us who might not be so in tune with advanced stats?
Yeah, so the idea with hero charts was to get a variety of different statistics and basically show them on one graphic. And the idea was to show at which level players are performing across these different metrics. So for forwards, I took the top 390 forwards in the NHL over the last 3 years in ice time, and the top 90 were considered first-line level, the next 90 were second-line level, and so forth, because there's three forwards per team times 30 teams. That's how I got the number 90. And the same thing was done for defensemen. And just when I started tweeting out these graphs, they were received really well, and I got a ton of requests for them. And then I decided to make the automated tableau where you can just load up any player you want on thepuck.blogspot.ca. And the stats used are fairly simple. We just have shot generation relative to a player's line mates. You know, we have for forwards, we have also goal generation relative to their line mates in opposition. And then we have suppressing shots. And then there's also individual production and shot rates.
Well, say, Dom, you know, things like this are pretty incredible, the way that you've come up with stuff like this and the way that kind of stats is progressing in the past couple of years. I mean, you know, this is an incredibly useful tool, and we've seen analytics kind of, you know, the idea of it being a fad is kind of just gone now. I mean, where do you stand? Like, where do you think this is going? Is this like, it's going to be such a major, you know, decision-making tool going forward for NHL teams that, you know, guys like you get employed by the NHL or by NHL squads?
Yeah. Well, you know, if you think back to a quote from the book Moneyball. It talked about how financial markets and baseball, how there are two fields that are both operated with biases and preconceptions, and you gain a competitive advantage when you eliminate those two things and replace them with data. And I think the same idea now is being applied to professional hockey. We value certain metrics in hockey because they're repeatable and allow us to predict future outcomes. So in hockey, we found that shot-based metrics do an exceptional job at this, at predicting future results, because they ignore volatile components like shooting percentage and save percentage, which are susceptible to high levels of natural variance. That is why Corsi is so popular. It all comes down to predictive ability. When you integrate modern stats into the decision-making process, you begin to eliminate some of those biases and deceiving beliefs that your competition may be plagued by if they say primarily rely on observations alone or flawed data. Like traditionally, teams of valued D-men who do things like block shots, grind out opposition along the wall, clear the crease. This notion still exists today, and that's why we see teams spend boatloads of cap space on blue liners like Andrew McDonald and Dan Girardi. Now a data-savvy team knows that defense happens everywhere all over the ice. You know, the goal is to reduce the rate at which your opposition generates chances. Those things that happen in the defensive zone mentioned earlier are important, but, you know, so is exiting the defensive zone, you know, making a clean outlet pass. Things that happen in neutral zone, like zone entries or preventing zone entries, and even in the offensive zone, something like sustaining offensive zone pressure. These things all help reduce the rate at which your opposition generates chances. And a team using predictive metrics as a part of player evaluation is going to realize that D-men like Andrew McDonald and Dan Girardi, they give up a ton of chances against when on the ice, regardless of doing those defensive zone things well. And you can ultimately avoid those disastrous contracts and spend the money on a better, more cost-effective option. So yeah, I definitely don't think it's a fad. I think that so many different fields could benefit from using data. And yeah, and I think just hockey is one of the later sports to get on with the analytics movement.
You mentioned, that it's one of the sort of victims of this movement has been the defensive defenseman.
Yeah.
And what's so interesting to me is that simultaneous to our expansion into the fan, the layperson for advanced stats knowledge, we've also had the game open up. And there's less clutching, there's less holding, there's less grabbing. And so simultaneous to our, you know, growing understanding of possession-based mm-hmm. metrics and how they can help us make better selections, we also have more of an emphasis on speedier guys and more puck possession guys just by the way they play, no matter whether or not we can track that. So, you know, defensemen like Ryan Murphy here or Morgan Riley or Jake Gardner or PK Subban, Erik Karlsson, you know, these speedy guys that 30 years ago might not have been, you know, top line. These guys are also great case studies for things. You look at their hero charts and they're phenomenal. They're great case studies to prove sort of that analytics has a place. What do you make of sort of the simultaneous expansion of knowledge for advanced stats and the speeding of the game?
Yeah, those things are definitely both happening. The teams now want defensemen who can move the puck, and maybe that they're more effective now because there is less clutching and grabbing. But it's still important to use analytics to identify those players, and yeah, I think the speeding of the game is definitely accelerating the process of which we're seeing teams rely less on that archetypal shutdown defenseman like the examples I gave earlier.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that might be why the old guard is also so quick to attack analytics places, because they're also experiencing some nostalgia for the old game and, mm-hmm. and maybe some withholding on accepting the game where it's going. You mentioned you also mentioned zone entries, and that's something that's kind of been for me anyway, for my development. I embrace stats. I try to learn as much as I can, but not being a math guy, not being a stats guy, things like your hero charts is so fantastic. So
yeah.
For me, like, it started with a knowledge of basic puck position. It started with Corsi. It started with Fenwick. And then we got into looking at relative numbers for each of those. And then zone entry sort of became the next thing. Corey Schneider used to be a shutdown line on Twitter. Used to be a Hurricanes blogger, and we loved reading his Hurricane stats until he was hired by an NHL team. He did a lot of zone entry stuff. Talk a little bit about Corey and maybe what you know about him and his work.
So what Corey did was incredible. Just the amount of work he put into his project, collecting zone entry data, zone exit data. And, you know, I've only been into, advanced stats in hockey for about a year. So, you know, I missed out on the Erik Tolsky days and, you know, the Tyler Dello days, but I believe it was Erik Tolsky who popularized the idea of tracking zone exits and zone entries. And I believe they may be a predictive, a predictive metric, just like Corsi. and they may be they may even accumulate events. Okay, sorry.
No worries, man.
They may stabilize faster and help us predict goals better than, say, something like Corsi. And what Corey did was just, you know, undertake this crazy project where he's going to collect this data and share it with us. And, you know, and that's good for him that he's been hired by a team. But for someone like me, you know, I'm not really sorry.
Well, Tolsky, I mean, we love him here, too. He's a Carolina Hurricanes guy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
So yeah, I mean, all these guys are making the jumps. Sorry, Dom. All these guys are making the jumps to teams. And you just tweeted out that you've accepted a position. Is it you're at McMaster? Is it a master's program there?
Yeah, I'm going. I accepted my offer of admission to their math and stats program.
So what is it that you hope to do with this moving forward? Are you going to be making a jump to an NHL team? Is that what you think you want to do with all this?
I've always like, you know, dreamt of the idea of maybe getting involved with the decision-making process in hockey.
Right. We've all played armchair GM.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And, you know, each team's going to need bigger and bigger staffs of guys too, eh?
Oh, yeah. But really it just starts with I have a love for hockey and I have a love for statistics. So really my goal right now is just to get involved with stats and, you know, whether that job is being a data teacher or if it happens to end up being, you know, working in the NHL, I'll be happy either way. Right now, what I'm doing is with hockey is just a hobby of mine and something I enjoy doing on my free time. But yeah, it would be incredible to get offered a position with an NHL club. But I'm not sure how realistic that is, especially with considering, you know, I'm just coming out of high school.
Yeah.
And I currently work part-time at a grocery store, and that's my only job experience.
Well, one would also imagine that as these get more popular, media outlets would start needing more and more guys that can put together things like this, especially the more visually appealing charts like yours. And, I mean, one of the reasons Cap Geek was so popular is because it appealed to the layperson. We could all make sense of it. So, you know, I would imagine that a lot of media outlets, I mean, Sportsnet with a huge contract, NBC Sports down on this side of the border, these are going to be stations that are going to be looking for guys like you too, I would think. What do you think?
Yeah, you know, I've definitely thought about that too. You know, when it comes to visualizing data and you know, making it presentable and, you know, maybe having an opportunity in that regard. But you know, right now I'm just more focused on just getting a degree in stat, math and stats and then worrying about something after that. I'm just trying to get into something I love and then find a job afterwards.
Well, speaking of that, I mean, changing gears a little bit. One thing I had thought about, and I meant to ask you, Dom, is, you know, a lot of the things we've been talking about analytics, especially in the playoffs here, is it's such a small sample size that a lot of times you can kind of throw a lot of it out the window. How much do you really buy into that idea that over the course of a best-of-seven series, a lot of possession metrics and usage metrics kind of go out the window?
Yeah, you know, I don't honestly put much stock into possession metrics when it comes to a 7-game sample. It's just so small and there's so much randomness involved. You know, in a 7-game series, you've probably got, you know, the biggest margin you'll see is probably a 60-40% split of one team over another. And then just even possession metrics from the season to the playoffs is going to involve a lot of variance and stuff. So, you know, I don't put too much stock into, you know, playoff metrics.
Which is kind of a beautiful thing I've noticed about these playoffs. I mean, you know.
Yeah, it's just so unpredictable.
There's just no time for any kind of regression to the mean, especially when it comes to the metrics like PDO and whatnot. I mean, we saw absurd save percentages in Washington and New York series and then saw a lot of it plummet in the subsequent series, which, you know, being a Rangers fan, I'm not, you know, upset about or anything.
Yeah, no, it's been a lot of fun too, and you know, last night's game was a testament to the unpredictability. I think we all expected a bit more of a close contest between the two Western Conference Finals participants. Dom Gallimini, he's ownthepuck.com or ownthepuck.blogspot.ca. He's Mimico Hero on Twitter. Give him a follow. His hero charts are incredible. They're really handy into figuring out how and why players are used the way they are and why they may or may not be overvalued. Dom, thanks for joining us on this edition of the program. We'll talk to you again soon.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys.
All right, cheers, Dom. So I didn't want to call him out or point to it in the middle of that, but it sounds like he's just getting out of high school now. Yeah. I thought he was taking like a master's program at McMaster. But holy cow, if this kid's 18 years old and he's putting this together, then yeah, this is going to be a very employable guy.
That's the thing I was thinking about. I was half decent with numbers all the way through high school, but holy shit.
Yeah.
I mean, you said I didn't have that capacity of thinking.
I couldn't put together secondary thoughts like that. So Dom Gallimini, onthepuck.com, Mimico Hero, just an incredible resource. Check out his hero charts. If you're one of our listeners and you have not seen these, they are incredible. They're such a great tool for he's edited them a bit. They look a little bit different now, but they're such a great tool for evaluating whether or not a player is playing to his usage, really, his deployment. For example, we might have a first or second line player like Jeff Skinner here, whose even strength ice time per game is just shy of the mark for first liner. So he's probably around 95.
Yeah.
You know, in the NHL.
Yep.
Among forwards. Looking at his Corsi 4 per 60, he's middle second liner. And his goals 4 per 60, middle third liner. So maybe a little bit of puck luck would help him out there.
Yeah.
Suppressing shots, he's garbage. Corsi against and Fenwick against. Corsi against is just above the fourth line. Fenwick against falls short of it. So his line's going to need a little bit more defensive help. He might have to be with someone like Jordan Staal, you know? I mean, these are the kinds of, you know, takeaways you can get just by looking at some of these.
Mm-hmm.
They're really handy.
Yep. And it's actually pretty revealing. I mean, honestly, a lot of these things intuitively are pretty clear. I mean, if you watch this game, you have a good idea. I mean, it's nice being able to quantify, for example, most of us that follow the Carolina Hurricanes are aware that Jeff Skinner has never been known and probably never will be known for his defensive game.
Individually, no, but, you know, his line could help him out.
Yeah, it could certainly buoy you.
Yeah.
And that's where this usage is so important, to kind of a good way to quantify that metric. You know, it's probably one of the better resources. And as we're sitting there talking to him, man, still can't believe. Fresh out of high school, probably.
Yeah, he's
really, really pushing the curve here.
Yep, absolutely. Hero charts are fantastic. They're among my favorite charts out there. One of the best visualizations of advanced stats. So thanks again to Dom at Mimico Hero for joining us on this edition of the Canes Weekly Podcast. And the name will probably change over the course of this summer. But before we go, James, I do think we should touch on a little bit of not just, you know, Stanley Cup stuff, but just a little bit of the coaching carousel and what's going around in the front offices of places. Mike Amendola, we'll start with that, CFO of the Carolina Hurricanes. He's been with the Whalers and Hurricanes organization for a long time.
Yeah.
Reports that he was escorted out of the building. I mean, what do you make of this?
I mean, I'm a skeptic with anything like this, and I'll say it's odd that a guy that's worked for them for so long would be escorted out of the building. Witnesses say. So, you know, it's still unconfirmed, and of course nobody will ever admit that. You're not going to have the Carolina Hurricanes saying, yeah, we escorted our CFO.
Derek Rowles, by the way, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, might be Rowles, EP at ABC 11, Raleigh-Durham, was the first to report that witnesses report that he was escorted out. So, yeah, it's unconfirmed, but he's absolutely no longer with the organization. Don Waddell even addressing that.
The only real question in my head, I was like, hey, man, what if, like, you know, he had a lot of shit he had gathered in his many years of working for the team and people were just helping him carry it out?
Yeah, that's true. Per Chip Alexander's post, he could not be reached for comment. That was on Thursday. So this will be interesting. Sounds like he will be replaced by Dennis Mora, former financial CPA with CompuWare. So,
yeah.
Wow, CompuWare.
Don't need a whole lot more explaining than that.
That's kind of surprising. What kind of pipeline might there be from CompuWare to the Carolina Hurricanes? We're going to have, I would imagine that as Karmanos makes his way out as owner, we're going to have a lot of these CompuWare guys stuck, and they'll start coming out as well, but this is a weird time for the Canes front office and ownership.
Yeah. The way I see it, I want to classify this as growing pains, like a transitional phase that is, you know, going to be weird and uncomfortable as some of this old guard goes out. and newer guys come in. I mean, even on player personnel and hockey ops, you're going to see that. And you're going to see in the front office, it's going to be a little bit quieter to the average fan. You're not going to notice it, obviously. You know, your average person that's going to sit down at PNC Arena, well, probably won't know and won't give a shit that the CFO has changed, but still, there's going to be some turnover. I mean, I want to classify it as that.
The way that dollars always affect things is something that's always been interesting to me. And so when we get Don Waddell here to come in as president of the dollars side of things, and then within a year, because that was announced last summer.
Yeah.
So within a year, the CFO is out. It'd be hard to imagine that that's
any kind of coincidence.
Yeah. We haven't even talked about any of the coaches. Mike Babcock in Toronto. Yeah. Mike Babcock in Toronto and Mike Babcock in Toronto are, I think, the three biggest hires. There's also, you know, Todd McClellan at Edmonton and Mike Babcock in Toronto to touch on.
And there is one Dan Bylsma in Buffalo as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Him and then Mike Babcock in Toronto.
Yeah.
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 What do you make of Bylsma in Buffalo?
What? I thought we were talking about Babcock in Toronto.
We'll get to him.
Yeah. No.
What do you think about Bylsma, eh?
I don't know. I think it's the right move, man. I mean, I, from my understanding, Buffalo threw ungodly sums of money at Mike Babcock, and
yeah, there was a lot of hurt feelings there.
I don't think there should be.
Did you watch the Babcock presser when he was introduced?
I actually did not. I mean, okay. I got a brief sum up.
You should
of it.
Watch it. It's on YouTube, obviously, but watch the presser. There are two or three guys there from Buffalo news stations.
I heard about
that. Those. Just grilled him. I mean, one started out was like, "Hey, it's been kind of reported that maybe you leveraged your deal with Buffalo. What do you think?"
That's basic bargaining.
And Babcock danced around it, right? I think he's totally guilty. Maybe they even shook on it, right? But he didn't sign anything.
Yeah, and it doesn't matter. Like, it's irrelevant. I mean, this is what you do when you are trying to negotiate a deal.
Yeah.
This is bargaining 101.
Someone from a Buffalo TV station then accused Babcock of lying. He said, there are reports that you are a liar in this scenario. Can you address that specifically? And he again danced around that, saying, like, well, you know, I've been with one organization for 10 years. Prior to that, you know, I don't jump around a whole lot from organization to organization, whether it's Anaheim or Spokane. And so when you have a guy like, when, you know, you have a situation like that, it's really hard to imagine that you're, you know, dishonest, which is a really weird way to say, yes, I absolutely lied. But that was so wild. So Buffalo doesn't get the guy they want.
Do they get the guy they need?
Number two in Dan Bylsma. I wonder, you know, Bylsma's saying that he thinks he can see a 1-2 center combo that mirrors Crosby and Malkin in Eichel and Reinhart. What do you make of that comment specifically?
I see that. It makes sense. I mean, well, the big thing is Bylsma inherited a team that was already ready for the Stanley Cup.
In 2009.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this is a very different thing. And, you know, how this team isn't tailor-made for him, like what he walked into in Pittsburgh, and he's going to have to build it from the ground up, and he's going to be a major part of this, which is...
Lots of pieces already there. I wouldn't quite say ground. I think there's a skeleton there, don't you think?
There's a skeleton, but there's still a hell of a lot to build.
You're going to need a goaltender. You're going to need a couple more D-men.
And you're going to need some time. You're going to need a lot of time and a lot of patience. And, you know, that's... The nice thing is, you know, him coming from Pittsburgh, it's an entirely different scenario, and it seems like Tim Murray is going to be willing to give Bylsma whatever he needs to win. It sounds like just the way that the coaching now is in the NHL, they have a lot of organizational say, and I think that's what Buffalo must have offered Bylsma, because that sounds like what was going to win Babcock over.
I think Buffalo's closer than Toronto is.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, Babcock's motivations may have been entirely different. I mean, we're not inside their heads, and we can only speculate, and I'm certainly no psychologist or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
That said, I mean,
Babcock did make mention a lot in his press conference about how he wanted to live downtown in a condo with his wife once his kids were all out. And Toronto offered him a great opportunity to sort of like live a city life, you know. And I don't imagine you'd really want to carve out a nice city life in Detroit or Buffalo. So Toronto's a bit different there. So he did make mention of that. Obviously, the money, 8 years, $50 million with an opt out clause after 5 years. There's a lot to be said from that. If he wanted his payday, he sure as hell got it. But to bring it back, I do think Buffalo has a few more pieces in place right now. They're going to need more patience, obviously, but they're growing an Eichel. They're growing a Reinhart. They already have an Evander Kane that, you know, 3-4 years now won't be out of his prime too far to be a major contributor to what might be a competitor in Buffalo.
Oh, my God, yeah. Well, you think about it, they're going to have an embarrassment of riches. You also have Ristolainen. You have Zadorov coming up. And as we said, Reinhart, and there's a number of other very talented players. I mean, Tyler Ennis looks like he'll be around for a while.
Zemgus Girgensons.
Yeah, and that fill. I mean, really, does that not remind you very loosely of what Bielsma had in Pittsburgh in Crosby, Malkin, and I mean, to maybe a slightly lesser degree.
Yeah,
in the case of
Girgensons. I don't think anyone is going to say that. I mean, it's nice for Buffalo fans and for Buffalo media that he's making comparisons to his last couple centers so that they don't have to do it and put words in his mouth.
Yeah.
But I think that might be just a bit of an exaggeration.
It's a stretch, but it's a solid core to build around.
You know what's not a stretch? I think more closely to Crosby Malkin as 1-2 would be Connor McDavid and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins McClellan is inheriting, don't you think?
Yeah, that's going to be very interesting to see. I mean, Tom McClellan was very much part of the rise and fall of the San Jose Sharks. We've seen them reach their zenith, and now they're on a downward, I won't say spiral, but they're in trouble.
San Jose?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I would not shy away from using spiral.
Really?
Yeah. No, absolutely. It doesn't have just, they're so done. Like, they are the fading star. They're Jenna Maroney in 30 Rock right now. They are the fading beauty that refuses to acknowledge that it's done and over and its time is gone. That's who they are right now. And the sooner they acknowledge that, the sooner they can get on the right track. But the problem is, and you know, no moves for Marlow and Thornton, as everyone's been saying. But they go with Peter DeBoer, former New Jersey Devils head coach. Pretty good defensively, smart guy, one of the best X's and O's guys. I think the big challenge there is what he's going to do in the locker room. There was obviously
some issues.
But those issues seem to come from Wilson more than McClellan.
Yeah.
It seemed to be more of a divide between players and Doug Wilson than the players and the coach. This would have been something that I didn't bother talking to. Joe Pavelski was at our last game for the Janesville Jets, and I didn't want to bring any of that up, but I really would wonder what his opinion and what he could speculate on from there. You know, what was it like? What was the relationship between Todd and the players? Because I would imagine that a lot of the players are pissed off that the wrong guy got fired there.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I mean, Tom McClellan has always been a very successful coach, and I think he might have been extracting more out of that team than he should have been for a number of years. There are a couple of years where they made the playoffs, and I really thought they had no business.
Yeah.
You know, and I think Edmonton is very much going to be on an upward swing, I think, especially with new organization. That's going to really, you know, guys like Bob Nicholson are really trying to give him all of the tools. I mean, watch out for Edmonton going forward. I mean, they have some good auxiliary players. I mean, they had some shitty X's and O's. I mean, no joke.
Are the three, so over the last 3 years or so, would you say that the three worst teams, just in terms of not just, you know, how bad they are on the ice, obviously, but how disorganized they were in the front office, are the three biggest jokes, were the three biggest jokes, Edmonton, Buffalo, and Toronto?
Well, I wouldn't say Buffalo was disorganized. They seemed to know what they were doing, especially this year. There was a plan.
Edmonton and Toronto were 1-2, though,
oh,
in either order.
Absolutely. It's
Buffalo was close. And now all three of them, I buy it. I don't know why. You know, these organizational rebuilds happen again and again. It's a cycle. This happens in hockey. This happens in every sport. You come close to reaching your goal. You either do or don't. And then some things happen. Some players leave. Some people leave for better and greener pastures. And then you have to do it all over again. So this is a cycle. This is just how it works, in especially a salary cap world. And it's easy to sell it every single summer. You know, this is going to be the guy, and he had a great press conference. He said all the right things. We talked about it last year with Bill Peters.
Yeah.
You know, hyper-analyzing this coach's press conference about, oh, man, we really love what he said here. Well, of course he's going to say that. But I'm buying into Buffalo and Toronto and Edmonton's rebuilds right now. Is there a team right now that you're not buying into that's maybe in the early stages of a rebuild?
Oh, man, that's a kind of a tough one. I mean, it's a pretty leading question.
I mean, is there one? I mean,
optimism
is. I don't feel terrible about what's happening in Carolina.
Maybe Arizona.
Maybe.
Maybe Arizona solely because it doesn't.
I think they're a step behind, though. Don't you think that they're going to be tanking 2016?
Well, yeah. I mean,
and don't you think they have a garbage goaltender that they have under contract for a long time so they can have an excuse to play him for 65 games next year?
Well, they have that. But the other thing is, it's never nothing's going to feel optimistic there until they figure out their geographic location.
You're damn right.
Like until they can figure out what their market situation is. Nothing is going to feel stable, you know? I mean, I would say there are definitely teams on the upward trend. Arizona, I'm not totally buying into. They're still moving downwards pretty quickly. You know, I'm if you look at the top few teams that are, or when I say top, I should say bottom teams that are picking at the top of this year's draft, obviously we could say we're optimistic about Carolina. And mind you, by all accounts, we may have gone to the bargain bin to find our coach because apparently he's the lowest paid coach in the NHL. Speculated, you know, Carolina is not particularly forthcoming with their financial data. You know, because the metric, I believe, was Mike Babcock is getting paid, I believe, 10 times what Bill Peters is per year, which I don't know, man. Thus far, I've been sold this bill on Bill Peters as a coach. And, you know,
if that's so he's around 500,000, 600,000.
Oh, I think it was 750.
750.
It was something like that.
Yeah.
It was something in that ballpark.
Yeah.
Which is, that's what made me think about Mike Babcock. How much is this going to change the landscape for coaches going forward? When coaches like Alain Vigneault, their contract is up in New York.
Yep.
What do they have to shell out to keep him?
High tide rises all ships. Another team going through another rebuild, the Philadelphia Flyers. It's curious where they are.
I'm not sold on that either.
With last night's game, they have acquired a second-round pick.
Yeah.
As a result of the Kimmo Timonen trade. An entry into the Stanley Cup Finals, which obviously Chicago did last night with their win over the Anaheim Ducks, means that the Flyers will receive the Blackhawks' second-round pick and 2016. But they're also obviously getting this one. So they pick up a second-round pick. They've also made a coaching change this year, firing Craig Berube, hiring Dave Haxtell, the former coach of the North Dakota ice hockey team.
The secret cousin of Ron Haxtell, as we all know.
Yeah, exactly.
Which I'm not totally sold on that rebuild straight away. I mean, Dave Haxtell is a complete unknown quantity here.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know what he brings. We don't know how he'll transit to the NHL level. All we've heard is great things. I mean, they have an amazing program at Nodak. And
did you see that he owes him $100,000?
That's bullshit. That's. I mean, it's chump change for what he's going to get paid in Philly.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's going to be like, oh, okay, I just write you a check.
Yeah.
I mean, but I'd imagine Philly might consider picking up that, you know, Ed Snyder and his pockets of money.
Why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
There might have been a little writer in his contract
mm-hmm.
that they wouldn't care of.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That said, I mean, I'm not entirely sold on it. Like I said, Philly has a lot of holes, and until Ron Hextall starts making moves to shore it up, I mean, there are some teams in the Metro, I think, that are just going to steamroll Philly potentially next year. I mean, dude, I even have more faith in Carolina than I do Philly or Jersey.
Really?
Yeah.
Who do you see as the guy for Jersey?
I thought it was Bylsma.
Yeah.
I could see them going off the board. I very much could see that. I mean, there's not a whole lot out there, and I think a lot of it depends on what's going forward, you know.
All the rumors right now are that it's going to be Phil Housley.
Yeah, I mean, I could see that, but I could also, like I said, I mean, Jersey's always kind of an unknown quantity, and they do tend to go off the board a little bit, and I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, Phil Housley has connections with Shiro and, you know, definitely with Lou Lamoriello. It would make sense, but, you know, until anything's confirmed. Because they also play it close to the vest as an organization. Lou Lamoriello does not disclose a lot of information, and a lot of times, totally off base.
Housley does have a gold medal in his house, coaching Team USA to the World Juniors win 2 years ago. The World Juniors tournament that ended the day before the lockout ended, the one in Ufa, Russia, that we all had to stay up until 2 o'clock for.
Yes.
That was a fun one. The Detroit Red Wings probably going with Jeff Blasio, right?
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, I think that's pretty much a given at this point. And that's not a bad choice. I mean, that pipeline's just going to keep going. I think next year might be they miss the playoffs, but they're going to retool on the fly, and I think it's not going to be a whole lot longer until they're back in it.
Claude Julien getting a minor vote of confidence. There was a report that he will be under watch, which is just telling us all what we already knew. What do you make of that?
I think it would be foolish. I mean, I think the Boston...
To watch him?
No.
To keep him?
Well, here's what I think.
By the way, do you remember when you asked me if Peter Shirelli was going to get fired, and I told you yes, and you were... A little bit taken away, you know. You were surprised.
I didn't, because I didn't think it should have been.
Okay.
I think it was a mistake. I think just there's an ebb and flow of organizational, you know, as an organization as a powerhouse. I mean,
what had to happen? Would you keep both of them? You missed the playoffs for the first time since.
Yeah, I give him a mully.
Nine?
I give him a mully. You missed David Krejci for most of the year.
Yep.
Zdeno Chara, you got to do something with him, or at least
Shirelli. Shirelli incredibly mismanaged the cap, though.
Oh, he did. I mean, he definitely did. But man, won you a couple Stanley Cups, and I'd give him his chance to finagle his way out of it. I mean, he kind of, like I said, to put it as blunt as I can, I really think that Krejci injury fucked them over.
Yeah.
I mean, if you want to look at analytics, look at the possession metrics for players that had to play outside of the role once Krejci went down. Carl Soderberg should not be playing on the second line.
Yeah.
And it showed. He got steamrolled. He got crushed night in, night out. Patrice Bergeron somehow got better. But that's because he's just bionic. Overall, just even age, that's a team in decline. And I think they should have given. I really think they should give him a chance to retool on the fly. Mind you, that's Edmonton's bounty now. Edmonton really lucked out that that was what the organization wanted to do. And I think Julian should have a chance to see what he can do in this last year. He'll be under watch, and that's fine. But there's going to be some changes made, and there needs to be, because, like I said, they're on a slight downward trend now.
Dave Cameron named head coach of Ottawa halfway through the year. It looks like he's going to be permanent there, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, you could push back on me on this. I think he definitely rode an unsustainable high coming from his players.
Show me a good goalie, I'll show you a great coach, and he got that. But, what are you going to do? You going to fire him? You going to dismiss him just because, like, well, that wasn't you, that was the goalie.
That doesn't count.
Yeah, there'd be so much pushback right now.
It would be absurd. And, I mean, he did get the best out of his players. I don't know what buttons he pushed, but Erik Karlsson turned on the Jets. His very best players played their best hockey when he became head coach.
And the less work that Brian Murray has to do to find a new head coach, the more rest he can get.
Yeah.
He came out and said that this upcoming year will be his last year with the organization. You know, all the best to him.
Yeah.
He's gained an unknown amount of respect from the hockey world in the last 18 months with how much of a warrior he's been with this. I've gained an incredible amount of respect for the guy. So, you know, if you keep Dave Cameron, then that's one less thing you have to do. That's one less thing you have to worry about. And that's a couple more hours a day throughout the summer that you get to rest up. Mm-hmm. And last one we'll get through. Pardon us for jumping around here, but the last one we got to touch on. We'll do two. Two situations, two very similar situations. Pittsburgh Penguins, St. Louis Blues both suffer early exits from the playoffs. Mike Johnston and Ken Hitchcock keeping their jobs. I'm fine with giving it to Hitch again in St. Louis, but I think Johnston had to go. That's where I went with that.
Well,
because they hired Johnston before they knew who they wanted to hire. They fired Bylsma before they knew who they wanted to hire. I thought that they would have been at least in on the Babcock sweepstakes this year, so that's why I thought that Johnston was going to go. But I'm fine with Hitch, especially Hitch coming out and saying that he wants to sort of completely redo every single thing that he's taught his team how to do. I'd give him one more year. It doesn't sound like you would.
No, I don't. Well, this is what I compared it to, and it's, mind you, the complete opposite of the actual situation that I'm describing. It reminds me very much of Bruce Boudreau's last days with the Washington Capitals when he said, we're going to tighten everything up and play in a defensive shell. And in the end, the Washington Capitals just misplayed everything and got shelled. And they hired Dale Hunter to bring in a similar system, and it actually somewhat worked. I wouldn't say it was the most successful, but with the personnel they had, they got to the second round and pushed the Rangers to 7 games. And I remember that being one of the tightest series I've ever seen. I just don't see this. I see this playing out in a very similar manner. I mean, yeah, they have the guns to do it. But I could see Hitch getting fired after a slow start, a couple, like 2 months in, and then Kirk Muller taking over part-time for the rest of the season. Because that's why they have head coaching experience back there. I mean, we all know how Kirk Muller's days in Carolina played out. Very different situation. I mean, the St. Louis Blues are a well-built team up and down the lineup. That's a team that should have been running through the Western Conference, probably to the Western Conference final, bare minimum.
Yep.
I was very surprised that they got crushed. Like, I wouldn't say crushed, but defeated as they did unceremoniously by the Minnesota Wild. That said, you know, I understand the Mike Johnston one a little more. Yeah, brought him in.
I know it's only been 1 year, but like
No. I'm not refuting that. I mean, I think Jim Rutherford made his decision. He'd look like an asshat if he turned around and fired him after 1 year. I think this is more about pride than anything else. And as we know, a lot of these executives are driven by pride in a major way. As we know, Jim Rutherford was slightly in Carolina, you know, sticking to his old boys. And that's kind of what I see a little bit here. I mean, we know they mismanaged that situation with Willie Desjardins not giving him his assistance, like giving him no autonomy, which seems to be a big driving force, almost more so than money, in the NHL coaching market. They want to have some say over the organization and how they construct their bench, because that makes sense. You know, Mike Johnston seems like, did he accept a deal where he can't do that? That sounds kind of silly to me. So what are you going to do? I mean, I don't think Mike Johnston leaves until Jim Rutherford steps down, because he already said he's a short-term GM.
Yeah, I think he put it at 3 years when he took it last year.
Yeah, that's right. And so that said, I mean, we pretty much have an exact estimated time of departure for Mike Johnston.
Yeah.
You know?
This year or next.
I seriously think his term will last as long as Jim Rutherford's does, which means the Pittsburgh Penguins will be mired in mediocrity.
Yeah.
And get ousted in the first round of the playoffs going forward.
Summer 2017, they're looking for a guy, you think. So, well, that'll wrap it up for coaching carousel talk. We probably should have touched on Dave Tippett as well. That's an odd scenario there, but we'll have plenty of episodes over this summer to
just shoot the shit,
speculate rampantly. Thanks again to Mimico Hero for joining us on this edition, and once more, we will have a watch party for the Stanley Cup Finals. We're going to work with Section 328 again. They'll probably organize that. Thanks, Mike. Not sure which bar it'll be, but we'll catch one of the games all together. You guys should come out and join us and say hello. So Mason on this microphone, James on the other microphone. Good to be back for another episode of the Canes Weekly Podcast. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week.